More of Lake Effect Now. I'm Mitch Tyke.
And I'm Bonnie North. In looking back at 2014, Lake Effect film contributor Dave Lurson says he can't necessarily tell us what the best films were, but he can describe his 10 favorites.
In all, Lurson says he doesn't think the last year was an especially strong one for movies, but there were some bright spots. We are not about suspense on this show, though, nor are we into countdowns.
So instead, Lurson counts up his top 10 with our Dan Harmon, starting with his number one, Birdman.
Well, what a groundbreaking movie in terms of filmmaking for major release. I mean, it kind of looks at this wavering line between reality and fantasy. Michael Keaton, who played Batman decades ago, plays a kind of twisted version of himself in this movie, a somewhat washed-up star from the past, superhero, trying to make a comeback. I mean, the movie touches on so many different things, the arrogance of critics, the arrogance of people in the theater, the dumbing down of the world. It leaves nothing unscathed.
Yeah, for certainly the two of us in this room, one critic and a moviegoer.
Yes.
I think we're arrogant, though. But
mm-hmm. Well, I hope not.
All right.
If we are, we would be getting it on the chin in that movie.
And then... Are these in order? And so Birdman,
yes.
Was your favorite movie
yes.
of the year?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And what about Only Lovers Left Alive?
Well, that is just a fantastic film by Jim Jarmusch, one of the pioneers of the indie film movement as we know it, going all the way back to the 80s. It's a vampire movie, but unlike the other vampire movies that have proliferated in the past few years, it's a very cool, hipster vampire film. You have to know a lot of about the world we live in to get most of the references in the movie. The characters played by Tilda Swinton and Tom Hiddleston are just fascinating people. I'd like to get to know them. I mean, as long as they wouldn't drain my blood.
And you're number three on the list, The Lunchbox. I swear I saw that before last year. Was last year just its main release?
It may have been out very early in the year. I can't remember the release date for it. It had a brief run here at the Downer or the Oriental. It's a movie from India about a Mumbai housewife trying to stimulate her unresponsive husband by sending him delicious lunches at his workplace. But the courier misdelivers the lunches to the wrong desk, and all kinds of interesting doors open because of that. It could very much sound like a bad Hollywood romantic comedy. But the movie is very sophisticated in its handling of human emotions and just phenomenally well put together as a film.
I think some of us sometimes forget that India has a whole other industry that parallels our filmmaking industry. This one, probably at the top of its craft, and a very, very deliberate pace, nothing flashy. But a really interesting human drama.
Right. India actually has a bigger film industry than the U.S. in terms of number of films produced per year. They have a huge domestic market, of course, but also Indian communities in the diaspora come out to see Indian films. AMC Mayfair sometimes screens Indian movies, for example. So huge worldwide market for these kinds of things. This would be Indian art house, I suppose, as compared to many Indian movies, which are very flashy, colorful, fun, song and dance routines based on Indian mythology, Hindu mythology, and so on. But this was a delightful, more serious kind of film.
On the heels of that one, you have Love is Strange, which I have to admit, I saw it, but I forgot about it until I saw it in your list here with John Lithgow. Really interesting movie about, not just about gay marriage, but that's part of it.
Right. It's a quiet film, and one that I suppose many people could see it, enjoy it, and then kind of put it aside. But it stuck with me for the brilliance of being able to handle something that's very topical, gay marriage on the one hand, but also use that as a way of exploring a whole raft of other issues in our society. What happens if you lose, health insurance? What happens if your social status goes downhill all of a sudden? You're no longer really in the middle class. What happens if you're forced upon relatives to live with them? What about personal space issues? I think the movie touches very nicely on all of those topics.
Is that a contender in any way for awards?
It should be, but I don't think it will be.
Yeah, okay. And right after that, Whiplash, which a movie about, well, drumming and putting it simply. But that movie was quite the, I was going to call it an effort to watch just because it was so intense.
It was probably the most intense movie of the year in terms of pacing, but emotional intensity. You have this extremely driven instructor, J.K. Simmons, playing him. Trying to, you know, literally drum his pedagogy into the heads of his students at a elite conservatory. And so he is a, you know, a rather, you know, dastardly over-the-top figure, but there is a point to him. I think that the movie is trying to look at what point do we challenge, you know, the mediocrity in our world right now, the acceptance of anything is okay, but when does that get out of hand? I mean, the problem with this movie for many people is that this movie maybe took it too far over the top to the point where you couldn't quite believe that anybody in the 21st century would behave like this particular music instructor.
That is something I thought about it when I was watching it. Was wow. I mean, this day and age, we're all so sensitive. So this seemed like straight out of the past in a way.
In a way, and of course, maybe the realism is that he did get fired eventually for this. But, you know, how long could somebody get away with some of the things that he said? I mean, again, some of the problems with him really had to do with choices of words and descriptions of people and so on, more so than the idea of a brutal drive for excellence. So that could be a flaw in the film, but I think that I was able to set that aside and just go with the general, the adrenaline pulse beat of this film.
All right. And after that, you have Locke.
Locke was scheduled to open in Milwaukee. I'm not sure if it ever did. I think it may have been here very briefly, but the DVD came out kind of quick. It is a one-person film set in a moving vehicle. As the actor in this film, Tom Hardy is driving along desperately across country, having a series of phone conversations. He is not going to be reporting for work the next day. He has his family wonders where he is. He's heading to a hospital somewhere else in a nearby city to attend to the birth of his child from a woman with whom he had a one-night stand. And, you know, the idea of making a dramatically exciting and moving film set in a moving car with only one person talking the whole time. I think it deserves recognition for being quite an accomplishment in drama.
And you said that's on DVD already?
Yes.
Okay, and you already mentioned Into the Woods, but why is that worthy?
Well, I like Stephen Sondheim. I mean, in theory, I'm in favor of musicals, but in practice, I tend to not like them because the music isn't very good usually. But here, the music was sophisticated. The acting was quite good. You had an opportunity to hear Meryl Streep sing and be a witch. I mean, Meryl Streep is just fantastic at whatever she does. Johnny Depp had a fun, smaller role as the big bad wolf. I mean, the storyline plays with the reality of Grimm's fairy tales, which are far grimmer than the usual Walt Disney versions of them. And the irony, perhaps, here is that Disney Studio released this very un-Disney children's film.
Well, in your article, you mentioned that it's Disney and not Disney-like in that people actually die.
Yes.
Well, characters die.
Yeah, I mean, I guess once in a while, didn't Bambi's mother die in that film, and everybody was upset about that. I mean, I guess, but yeah, the tone of this movie is much darker and I think more interesting than what we think of stereotypically as a Disney film.
And Philip Seymour Hoffman's last movie that we're ever going to see, a new one, A Man Most Wanted.
Yeah, not a big box office film, I don't think, but certainly something worthy of going back to. It's already out on DVD anyway, and a fine way for him to conclude his career. He did a lot of different kinds of things. He had range, but he was very good at playing somewhat grumpy, somewhat disheveled-looking, irritated people who were just a little bit smarter than everybody else in the room with them. And he did that quite well, playing a German counterintelligence agent. tracking a possible Islamic terrorist and at the same time contending with idiot CIA people and dumb Germans in his own agency.
Do you think, besides the fact that Philip Seymour Hoffman is the star of the movie, do you think anything about it is noteworthy? What if it wasn't him in it?
Well, if it wasn't him in it and you had a capable actor playing that part, the movie would still be very good for this murky look of it. It captures visually the whole twilight atmosphere of espionage and counter-espionage and informers and infiltration into secretive organizations. So a very appropriate-looking film with a great actor starring in it.
And thank you for reminding me that I wanted to see this movie and never got around to it, which was Belle.
Belle came out early in the year, which probably means it'll be overlooked come Oscar nomination time, as these things are. It's based on a true story. I called it Pride and Prejudice, with the emphasis on prejudice, about a young woman in 18th century England who was the daughter of a British aristocrat and a slave woman. And the family of the aristocrat accepted her, to an extent at first. She was allowed to live, on the family estate and was not treated as a servant, though she wasn't quite treated equally either. It's a fascinating story about the various ways that race and identity have played out over the past.
I do remember seeing the previews for it. It seems like it just flashed on and off and wasn't around that long.
Yeah, it probably did not get the attention it deserved. It was, very meticulous in terms of period furnishings, like a Merchant Ivory film. It had an excellent screenplay that reminded me of classic Hollywood, where you have foreshadowings and you have, glimpses of what's going to come ahead, but yet surprises. I mean, it was a very well-written, well-filmed, and well-acted movie.
All right. And at number 10 is Gone Girl.
Gone Girl was a movie that I did not read the novel, so I can't say the book was better or worse. I have no idea. The novelist wrote the screenplay, so presumably it reflects her ideas. It kept me interested all the way to the end, and it's a long movie, too. And I usually don't like movies that go beyond 1 minute, beyond 2 hours. It's one of my pet peeves. This movie was a long movie. It held my interest. I left feeling, is this, really over the top, believable or not, or should we not care about that aspect of it? Ben Affleck, I think, was very good as kind of a mediocre, goofy guy who's totally out of his depth, and maybe that's who he is in real life. I don't know, but I thought he did the part quite well. And yeah, I like the movie, but I'm not sure if I really want to spend another 3 hours with it ever again in my life.
All right. Well, I hope this year is better than last year. Yeah.
Well, we can only hope for the best.
All right. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Thank you.
Dave Lurson is arts and entertainment editor of the Shepherd Express Weekly. He's the author of its I Hate Hollywood blog as well, and our regular film contributor. He talked with Dan Harmon about his 2014 top 10 list.